You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
A slightly different look now at a place that's certainly been in the news for the last few weeks. There are some places in the world where the notion of fact and fiction get intermingled in a political shadowland of brutality, delusion, and isolation. Iraq was like that under Saddam Hussein. Romania was more a cult than a nation during the Cold War under its demonic dictator Nicolae Ceausescu. In the last days of Haile Selassie in Ethiopia, there were monstrous distortions of reality. Same with the Shah of Iran. But perhaps in our time, no place departs so readily into hallucination and fantasy as North Korea. And it's precisely the place novelist Adam Johnson goes in his new novel, The Orphan Master's Son. Though the book is fictional, the imagery is rooted in years of research, including a trip to North Korea. Adam Johnson, author of The Orphan Master's Son, joins us now. Good morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You know, this is... I wanted to ask you, why did you choose North Korea? But having read much of this book and knowing that you're a writing teacher at Stanford University, so you have a passion for writing, I got to figure, as difficult as this scene and setting is, you were kind of a kid in a candy store picking North Korea as a novelist.
Well, I do think it's the most mysterious place in the world. And with the passing of Kim Jong-il, none of that mysteriousness has changed. I will say that, in the West, we have a certain kind of story we tell ourselves in which every single person is the center of their story. And in North Korea, that's just the opposite. There's one central character and 24 million secondary characters. And I was very curious about that as a student of writing and a teacher of writing.
Now, not to diminish the humanitarian issues, and you hit them very hard in this book that are going on in North Korea. The setting of North Korea reads, and I was struck by this as I read The Orphan Master's Son, it reads a little bit like, Game of Thrones. You've got a simple world of loyalty and power and people facing, life and death choices from moment to moment. And that's, in a sense, how this reads.
Well, I think it's a daily reality, and it's so ingrained in the people there that it's almost unconscious. I'm a big person, and I remember visiting there and walking through Pyongyang. And when you're among like throngs of people, and they're all wearing the same shirts, and they have the same Kim Il-sung pins, and the women have the same shade of lipstick on, then a large Western person like me walks through. People wouldn't even dare to take a glance at me. They wouldn't even take the slightest risk to do something spontaneous, because to do something spontaneous there is to do something unconsidered and therefore dangerous.
So tell me about the protagonist in your book, Pak Jun-do.
Well, I wanted to write a character that began the sort of the North Korean model of what a person is, someone who is obedient to the state, who does what he's told. Because he's an orphan, he's at the lowest ranks of society. Unfortunately, there are many real orphans in North Korea, and there's no one there to advocate for them. And they're kind of used as farmed labor to go into the worst, aspects of society, into the military, into dangerous duties. And I wanted to take a character who did right by the national narrative. And he slowly, through a couple mysterious encounters, one with the Americans early on, begins to see the cracks in the party line and begins to become more like a Western character, which he takes life into his own hands.
Well, it's before that shift, it's interesting how he grows up in an orphanage and learns the power of life and death in a banal way by being able to make choices that are life and death choices in the orphanage. Explain.
Well, unfortunately, there are not enough resources there. When we look at North Korea, there's complete unknowns about the center of power, who's in charge and what's happening and who's really pulling the strings in the central cadre. But out among the average citizens, because of the testimonials of so many defectors, we do know how much millet they live on, what their daily lives are like, about their self-criticism sessions, about the tough choices they have to make. So I researched very closely what it was like to be an orphan, to live in a place where not everyone was going to make it. I set the beginning of the book in the floods and famines of the 90s, and I based it on the true lives of people who had to decide how much they could eat. I remember reading a narrative of one young woman, and the day she said she realized she was starving. She was scavenging for food with four of her relatives, and when they found a rotten peach on the ground, her father cut it into four slices and let her know that there wasn't enough for her, that her elders had to eat first. And that was the moment she realized, oh my God, I'm a starving person.
You know, that kind of detail reminds me of Barbara Demick's book, nonfiction about North Korea, that's extraordinary. The detail that she told us once on this program of speaking with someone who'd ventured into China from North Korea and said she knew she was rich because she knew what a banana tasted like. Those Right. kinds of details are tantalizing to a novelist, I would think.
The Barbara Demick book is truly amazing. I remember a moment in that book when a refugee moves across the border of the Yalu River and into China and sees a bowl of rice laying on the ground and comes to realize that rice, because many North Koreans live on millet, had been set out for the dog. And she realized the status she'd lived under her whole life. And it's details like that get under your skin and make you want to write a novel.
We're talking with Adam Johnson, who did write a novel about North Korea. It's called The Orphan Master's Son. He's on the line from Stanford University, where he's a writing teacher. Adam Johnson, so as difficult as it is to imagine the circumstance of young people growing up in North Korea, the kinds of details you were just describing there, the idea that you never see rice, you have no idea who's controlling your government, as difficult as that is, when you make the turn in your book, how does a person question all that and break free of it, then I really was at a loss. I could not imagine how you would be so isolated and then be able to step free. How difficult was that for you as a novelist?
Well, I mean, we're dealing with a society in which there's one reality. You're told what that reality is, and to deviate that could come at great personal peril. And there's a character who decides to finally change his reality. And one truth about North Korea is that to question reality is dangerous. And oddly, for at least a while, it's the one place where someone could do a grand act of impersonation and become someone else, because other people are too afraid to question it. I remember in my research, I had run across a report by the U.S. FAA writing about why Koryo Airlines, the North Korean Airlines, was the most dangerous airline in the world. And it wasn't because of the aging fleet, which they had, and the poor maintenance, which was a problem, but it was because the co-pilots never felt that they could point out an error to the pilot. And they cited three incidents in which planes went down and the co-pilots had known something was wrong but couldn't admit it.
Oh, that's astounding. Have you told a story here in this book that is universal about the need for all of us to question reality, to step outside, to maybe do something a little bit dangerous? Or is this more of an obscure story of an eccentric, almost magical, brutal place?
Well, I think there are lessons for all of us about identity and humanity. If in a place like this, to confess your true feelings to a loved one, to let someone know that, oh, you believe everything is a lie, that to tell a true thought that's passed down from someone else could come at great risk. You know, when would a person decide to do that? How would they do that? And isn't that a great test of the human heart? Mm. And here we are in the West when we can do that whenever we want. And how often do we actually open up our hearts to the people who are right there next to us?
What would you have been if you grew up in North Korea, Adam Johnson?
Well, if I was a writer, I would have to have written for the state. And this is something I considered a great deal during my research, because there are no North Korean novels that we know of. For 60 years, every single person who is an artist in that country has had to paint or to write songs or to write books that glorified the Kim regime. And we don't have a single literary book as we know it, one that questions the human condition. Only one that glorifies the Kims. And I thought about that a lot while I wrote, was that if I was to do what I feel like I was born to do, I would have to write lies about Kim Jong-il and Kim Il-sung.
Adam Johnson is the author of The Orphan Master's Son. They're not lies about North Korea, but it is a fictional account of a young person growing up and breaking free in North Korea. Adam Johnson is a writing professor at Stanford University. Thanks so much, Adam.
My pleasure.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.